From the authentic soul of Bernie Siegel, MD, comes Mind Health Matters, a show that reflects Bernie's passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges, not just the physical ones, so that each person can live life fully with the understanding that, as Bernie reminds us, we only have today. Believing that we are all here to love one another, each in our own unique way, Bernie has crafted eternal truths and the timeless wisdom of the ages. Join Bernie as he shares his powerful journey through life while offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom.
Hello, everybody. It's not as much fun in wintertime doing all these things, but, you know, I forgot who said it. You make your own weather. So just think about that. If you want better weather, what do you have to do with your life? Okay. Today's guest is Dr. Patricia Muzam. And she has put together a book entitled Beyond Medicine. The subtitle describing it, A Physician's Revolutionary Prescription for Achieving Absolute Health and Finding Inner Peace. And there's enough comments in the first few pages to tell you it's a good book. And I'm just going to read you mine as the introduction. Patricia Muzam's book, Beyond Medicine, is a treasure that we all need to read in order to learn from her experience and wisdom. When I began speaking and writing books, I was called controversial. What Dr. Muzam writes about is not controversial. It is her experience and mine too. She has the courage to practice what she preaches and to accept and learn from her experiences. Doctors are trained to treat the diagnosis but not the patient. But Dr. Muzam shows how the patient needs to come back into the process to actively participate, to find absolute health. So read Dr. Muzam's prescription to help you find health and inner peace. And my problem, Patricia, is I never stop talking because I have an angel named George who uses me to talk, and he never stops. And one more comment I want to make, or George wants to make before we give you the microphone, is that what I learned as a doctor, why I was controversial, I learned from patients' experience as well as my own. So it wasn't about a study that was done, because I learned also when I'd speak to other doctors, oh, that's a poor study, that's poorly controlled, you ended up in argument. So I became a storyteller. And then I heard more stories. This is something I tell people now, that don't hide your unique experiences, because if you share them, what happens is, and I as a doctor would get phone calls from people saying, can you come to my hospital room? Can I come to your office? I know I'm not your patient, but I need to talk to you because everybody else thinks I'm crazy and I want to. And I would hear unique experiences of healing and things that I could then share and pass on to other patients to help them. So I tell people, don't hide your experience. You know, when we think about it, like the near-death experiences years ago, that was all, oh, that's crazy. It's things that happen in the brain. Well, now it ain't crazy. And we have organizations supporting it. So anyway, Patricia, I'll hold my breath. And tell us, I mean, what fascinates me is what made you write the book? Because it is so frustrating to try to get the medical profession and medical schools to change and teach doctors about people, you know, not waiting for them to get sick or their family to get sick to learn, but right. to learn from so-called real education. So what got right. you to write this?
Right. Well, Bernie, you know, before I answer that question, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for being in my book and being on the cover of my book, and thank you for the remarkable work that you have done that at one point was considered controversial, because you have been a beacon for me. you've been a beacon for me, and you've helped me to kind of find my way in a way that certainly, as you know, hasn't been a way that's supported by the training and the conventional Western medical
right.
world that we're both part of. So thank you. I'm so delighted and honored to be speaking with you. Thank you.
Thank you. So let me interrupt again.
Yes.
So people
George
understand.
George is fine to interrupt.
One of the things that impressed me years ago, I was shocked because I was speaking to a medical school, and I said to all the students, draw yourself working as a doctor, and then pass the pictures up to me. In the entire medical school class, this is about 98 people, only one person put a patient in the picture.
Mm.
And he was handing her a tissue, not
wow.
medicine or operating. All the others were either equipment or sitting behind a desk with their diploma on the wall.
Mm.
And it
wow.
blew my mind.
That's really telling.
Yeah.
yeah. And it is still an era where we don't focus on the patient. It's more disease-centered care than person-centered care, unfortunately.
You know, and it's hundreds yeah. of years have been doing this. I mean, Jung's quote was, the diagnosis helps the doctor, but it doesn't help the patient. You know, for there,
yeah,
the key thing is the
great,
story.
That's a great line. That's
yeah.
a great line.
I mean, I learned to really say to people, what are you experiencing? Oh,
yeah.
do this. This really yeah. is fascinating. Because you say to people, what does your pain feel like? What is it like to have cancer? Well, pressure. Failure.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't make these up.
Mm-hmm.
I said to the lady, think about what the pressure is in your life that you need to eliminate to help you feel better. She was about to be admitted to the hospital with a week of migraine headaches. And she said they felt like pressure. The nurse came to me about 25 minutes later and said she went home, the headache's gone, it's her marriage. Boom.
Wow.
And the lady who said failure, when I said, how does that fit your life? Well, I have cancer, my body failed.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I'm asking about your life. She said, oh, my parents committed suicide when I was a child. I must have been a failure as a child.
Mm.
And
wow.
that's the other thing. I mean, one of my mm-hmm. comments now is the greatest vaccine available to everybody is love.
I love it. That's wonderful.
You know, that changes you and your body and everything.
Absolutely.
And literally. Yeah.
Yeah, and we're certainly living in a pandemic of fear since this invisible microbe entered our life. It's a pandemic of fear, and, you know, fear can make us sick and keep us sick and suppresses the immune system. And, yeah, love is really the answer.
Right.
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. have you done much work with drawings at all?
You know, I've done more work with expressive writing rather than with drawing.
Okay.
With journaling.
Wait,
and
yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm writing sort of free-form writing, like left non-dominant handwriting and
uh-huh.
conscientious writing. Yeah.
Yeah, anything that can get the consciousness out. And I'm an artist, so it was... And when I drew a picture for Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, she looked at me and said, what are you covering up?
Huh.
I said, what are you talking about? She said, you use a white crayon on a white piece of paper. That changed my life.
Wow.
That and a patient saying to me, I need to know how to live between office visits.
Wow. I love that. I love
yeah,
that.
Yeah, one of my partners, when I came back to the office, he said to me, you're gone. I said, what do you mean? He said, you're not the same person you were on Friday.
Huh.
And it was this patient. I was at a workshop
wow.
with her. And what
wow.
she said to me, and he was right, about 3 or 4 years later, you know, I was out lecturing and giving up surgery
wow.
and starting support groups and things like that.
Yeah.
But it was amazing to me that he could look at me and see a different person walk into the office. But we all need to be in touch with that. And one of the things I found, too, with the trouble with medicine, was when I wrote articles and sent them to medical journals that came back saying, interesting but not appropriate. when I sent it to a psychiatry journal, it came back saying appropriate, but it isn't interesting.
Oh, my.
And, you know, again, I think that's part of what you're trying to teach us. Well, like one of your chapters, healing from the inside out. And it's, again, you can't separate your life, your emotions from, you know, the physical, because the two are interacting.
Right.
It's hard for me to not keep telling stories, but...
That's right. I love the story.
You know, that. Well, let me use one more term, and then think about what you'd like to say for a few minutes, okay? So I can be quiet. It was in Solzhenitsyn's book, Cancer Ward.
Mm-hmm.
It says, one of the men comes in and says, oh, I found a book in the hospital library. It says there are cases of self-induced healing, not recovery through treatment. And it was as though self-induced healing flooded out of the great open book like a rainbow-colored butterfly. Mm-hmm. And they all held up their foreheads and cheeks for its healing touch as it flew past. But you and I know that when people get well when they're not supposed to, doctors are more likely to say, oh, you had a spontaneous remission. And I learned to stop saying that and say, how come you didn't die when you were supposed to? And everybody had a story about what they did. You know, changed occupations, moved, got a dog, bought a house on the ocean. I mean, there wasn't anyone who didn't have an answer to why they didn't die because their body began to appreciate life. You know, and the problem I also learned was that people were afraid to try to not die because if I die, I'm a failure. You know, but the ones who really chose life, that not dying was a byproduct. It wasn't what they were trying to do. They were trying to enjoy the day. Yeah, let your heart make up your mind. I learned how many people put notes on their refrigerator, you know, reminding them to let your heart make up your mind. Do what feels right. Stop thinking. Anyway, I'm going
to
hold my breath. Now tell us something about yourself and your book.
Well... Gosh, I could go in so many different directions from just reflecting on everything you've just shared. I guess I'll start with answering your first question, which is why I wrote the book. I wrote the book because I had a burning desire to get a message out there to people who are navigating not just health, but navigating life challenges. And I wanted to get this message out there that whatever's going on, whether it's a health issue or something else, that there's a path to healing and there's a path to ease and there's a path to peace around it all. And it's a path that completely defies everything that I was ever taught in my medical training about health and illness and getting well. And it's a path that defies everything that we're taught traditionally about the nature of reality. You mentioned near-death experiences. It's a path that defies how we tend to understand space and time in the world around us. I don't know if that's getting a little bit too woo-woo for people who are listening, but bottom line is I had a number of experiences earlier on in my life that completely changed how I understood life and how I understood health and healing. And I'd borne witness to cures that defied conventional medical thinking, and I'd had experiences that defied how we understand space and time and reality. And all of that convinced me that there was a way to heal completely beyond the bounds of Western medicine. And there was a greater reality beyond our thinking brains and our five senses. And the key to finding peace and encountering healing lay in being open to these notions that complete healing is possible and that there is a greater reality beyond our thinking brains and our five senses. And I also say something in the book that may not be an idea that everyone resonates with, but I talk about healing as either a return to the body or it may be a departure from it. It may be leaving the body. It may mean dying. The reality is, we don't. As a dear friend of mine says, we don't get out of this life alive, right? We're all going to die. But if we could wrap our heads around the notion that that's a natural part of life, we might be less fearful of illness and dying. And if we were less fearful, like you said earlier, you know, love is our way to healing. If we have love, we're not in fear. If we're fearless in the face of illness and dying, perhaps we can even return to our bodies more readily if we're meant to return to our bodies. So bottom line is my book offers everyone who explores it a path to freedom from suffering, a path to struggling. And that path is actually not a path. It's actually a way that's available in this very moment. In this very moment right now, we can get on that path to healing by simply being present in the here and now. And I'm going to stop it. I'm going to stop at that and let
you.
Right.
I mean, you know, people need to understand you can't separate your mind and your body, you know, like the psychiatrist and the cancer doctor, you know, treating different things. They're treating one thing, the person. And that's why I found the drawing so interesting and how the body then responds. Draw yourself getting chemotherapy. The devil is giving me poison. And I don't make up these drawings.
Wow.
The other was, it's flowing from God, like coming out of, you know, an IV down into the person. And my patients at the hospital, we were called crazy. But then it became fun to be taking care of Siegel's crazy patients because literally they didn't have side effects to treatment. And at first, all the doctors thought, well, the nurses have screwed up, or there's something wrong with the radiation machine. And then they learned, if Siegel's name is in the chart, there's nothing wrong, it's the patient.
Yeah.
And the patients, this is a quote, I get out of the way and let it go to my tumor. So they had no side effects. And I think about that when I talk to people about the COVID vaccine. You know, you sit home saying, oh, I could have a reaction, I can have aches and pains, I can get sick, I can, then your body's ready for all that, so you go and you have a reaction. But if you said, this is a wonderful thing, the vaccine, it's going to keep me healthy, protect my body, I'm looking forward to it, then you don't have any side effects.
Right.
So I've learned, you know, to have a positive view, or if I don't want to do something, all right, don't do it. But, you know, when you're talking about poisoning yourself, and I would literally get people to draw pictures, so if it looked horrible, I'd say go home and 4 or 5 times a day picture it in a beautiful way, and you're doing well. And then a week later, I'd get a lovely picture, and I'd say, okay, you can go ahead with surgery or chemotherapy or whatever it is, you know, you're going to have because your body is ready to heal. I mean, on a practical level, Monday, we have more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses.
Right.
So you begin to understand how somebody's feelings about their life, their job, affects your body and immune function and everything else.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think this is something that Louise Hay said, but every thought we think is creating our future.
Yes.
Every thought we think is creating our future. And then there's a quote from Albert Einstein that I actually have in the book that I love. I'm not sure I'm going to state it exactly because I don't have the book right in front of me, but something to the effect that imagination is a preview of life's coming attractions.
Right.
Imagination is a preview of life's coming attractions. So I love how you have worked with people to get in touch with what's coming up for them, and if it's something's coming up for them that is feeling uncomfortable or harmful or disruptive, you're helping them to open to all those feelings around it, so then they can create a positive affirmation in terms of what they're going to.
Yeah, one student called me and said, I want to do a study to show that how you act changes your body chemistry, immune function, and stress hormone. My professor thinks it's crazy. Why should acting change it? Would you call my professor? So I called him and told him, let the kid do this as his thesis. And he did.
Yeah.
And, of course, it showed when these male-female actors were in a comedy, immune function rose and stress hormone levels went down. when they were in a tragedy where he was the murderer of her husband, the stress hormone levels went way up and immune function went way down.
Yeah.
So again,
that's so
you see that. Yeah, your feelings are your chemistry.
Absolutely.
Oh, and
so
I mean, I keep thinking all these studies.
Surprising. Yeah.
Yeah, if you laugh for no reason every 3 hours, this was done with cancer patients. The group that laughed for no reason every 3 hours for like a month, at the end of the period of study, more of them were alive and healthy than the control group that wasn't told to laugh for no reason.
Yeah.
So, and I loved it years ago, you know, why you can write books now and not get criticism. Like I mean, it was fun because I was on all the famous talk shows with other doctors yelling at me. But, you know, they'd always say, oh, you're crazy, oh, you're crazy, oh, it doesn't work. The patients and the audience always nodding their head yes, but the doctors are arguing. And but, you know, with time, enough patients showed up and stories showed up that they began to realize, you know, it's not crazy. And his patients aren't doing well. So let's stop fighting and... you know, empower the patients. But it still, I keep saying, needs to get into the basics of medical education to understand it's scientific. No matter what your specialty is, you need to understand the person you're taking care of.
Yes. Yeah, and that reminds me of a quote of, I think it's Hippocrates who said, it's more important to know the person who has the disease
right.
the disease the person has.
Yeah. I mean, I used to think Louise Hay was a little crazy because she'd say, you know, if the third toe on your right foot hurts, this is what's going on in your life. I mean, she was so specific about so many things.
Yeah.
And we were together on the stage one day in this big audience, and a lady got up and said, you know, talked a little bit, and Louise Hay said, do you have someone in your life you need to express your anger at? And the woman immediately, and again, this is an audience we don't know, and I thought, where did that question come from? But the woman immediately responded, yes, my mother. And Louise said, go home and express your anger. Mm. And I thought, how did she know that that was the woman's problem? But that's when I began to realize it's because when the woman is talking about her aches and pains, Louise knew where it was coming from in her life. She didn't have to ask her, like I did, you know, describe what you're feeling and then use the word to guide me. She already knew from her experience. And I may add, we just got a, you know, from Hay House, a calendar for the year. So I get a message from Louise A. every day.
Nice.
You know, and live up to the sermon. Yeah. And as you're saying, too, it's not about not dying. It's about living. When you enjoy living, you don't die when you're supposed to. That's why the, you know, I mentioned the rainbow-colored butterfly. It's the harmony is the rainbow. The butterfly is a symbol of transformation.
Hmm.
And so when people, because of the fact that they learn they're mortal, transform their lives, find harmony, that's when they show up as, well, it's hard for me not to tell stories of patients because this was a landscaper who I told him after I operated on him for carcinoma of the stomach, I said, you need more treatment. And he said, I don't have time for it. It's springtime. I'm going to go make the world beautiful. So when I die, I'll leave a beautiful world.
Mm.
6 years later, the nurse handed me his chart. I said, he's dead. He hasn't been back in the office. Mm-hmm. She said, open the door. So I opened the door, and there sat John. Hi, I have a hernia from lifting boulders in my landscape business.
My.
And he became my therapist, as crazy as that may sound.
Wow.
Because, I mean, I started spending time with him in nature and how healing it was.
Mm.
And I may add, he lived to 91, and I spoke at his 70th wedding anniversary to tell people what a wonderful therapist he was for me. But now I take time every day to be in nature and chat with God and, you know, and just keep my heart feeling good. Well, everyone, I know I never stopped talking. As I said, it's my angel George using me. But I have to take a breath, and we'll be back to talk with Dr. Patricia Musum, author of Beyond Medicine, because that's really where we have to go for true healing, beyond medicine. So we'll be back in a minute to talk with her again.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every Thursday and Friday, 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom weaved through his delightful stories. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Why are we here? How can we be happy? Questions asked from millennials to boomers. Crappy to Happy, Sacred Stories of Transformational Joy answers them using true stories of grit, grace, and love. James Redfield, author of The Celestine Prophecy, wrote in the foreword, "This book is a seminar about emerging truths and offers grounded solutions through the art of the comeback." Dr. Bernie Siegel, a contributing author, wrote, "Bodies die, but spirits and consciousness survive and recycle." So, grab some tissues, open your book, and prepare to cry and laugh till it heals. Crappy to Happy by Reverend Ariel Patricia and Kathleen O'Keefe Cannabis. Available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and booksellers worldwide.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, Daily Messages of Inspiration, Hope, and Love, and Faith, Hope, and Healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
Looking for a fun and relaxing getaway? Omega Rest and Rejuvenation Retreats are a great way to unwind and renew your spirit. Sit and read in the garden, explore the woodland trails, or try a daily yoga or meditation class. You can stretch your body, quiet your mind, and do as much or as little as you choose. Located in Rhinebeck, New York, just 90 miles north of New York City, Omega's natural environment and quiet pace allow for extraordinary experiences to unfold. Learn more at eomega.org.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Hello again, folks. We're back. We're Bach. As I mentioned, it's hard for me to stop talking, but I've learned a lot and accepted a lot. I mean, just to bring up some more craziness, you know, I mentioned my angel George. I was hearing voices literally speaking to me for years. I don't have time to tell you all my stories because this time is about Patricia Musum and her book, Beyond Medicine. And she's an MD also. We'll learn more about her in the next couple of segments. But it's, again, being open to all these things and the mystical. And I may add that when I realized I was giving lectures that had nothing to do with my outline and plans I had made about what to say, I just stood there talking. Because I thought, well, it sounds good. And several times people have come up to me out of the audience, including one who drew a picture, and said, there's a man standing next to you, so I drew his picture for you. And I said, oh, that's George. I had met him in a meditation. I never had met him as a person, just in a meditation at a workshop. And then, boom, people started seeing him next to me. So, you know, I have to apologize when he doesn't stop talking, really. Because people rent a room, you know, for you to come and give a talk, and you don't stop and the time is up. So they're holding up signs saying, stop, stop, you know. Anyway, Patricia, back to you. What do you want to let the world know?
Oh, gosh. So many things to share and not so much time that we have left. You know, I want to share a little bit of more about what you just mentioned, the mystical and this notion of your angel George and things and phenomena beyond belief, right? I want to offer people this what-if notion. What if we could wrap our heads around the notion that maybe we don't begin at birth and end when we die?
Yeah, yes.
What if we could wrap our heads around that notion? And I will share also, and this was actually my favorite chapter in the book, but it was also the hardest chapter to write. There is so much ancient wisdom speaking to these notions that this physical body is ephemeral. It's just one aspect of our being. And then this notion of consciousness, that notion that seems to keep us and make us unique and individualized. This notion of consciousness isn't something that begins when we're born and ends when we die, that some element of us existed before we came into our bodies and some element of us exists after we leave our bodies. And yeah, this is part and parcel of so many ancient traditions, so many cultures, so many non-Western healing traditions. But there's also a huge and really robust body of science supporting these notions. So I just want to ask people, if you're not there yet, if you're not open to that, what if you could be open to the notion that you don't end when you die, that your loved ones don't cease to exist in some form when they've left their bodies, that there's more to this experience of life of living than being in a physical body? What if that were really so? How might you actually live differently? How
right.
might you feel about life differently? And I know for sure I had some experiences early on in my life when I was in college. I had a number of psychic experiences that really blew my mind and blew my understanding of reality. And really forever changed how I came to understand what it means to be human and what life and reality are all about, and quite literally left me fearless of dying.
Mm-hmm.
So I just ask people, what if you don't completely accommodate these notions? What if you could? How might you experience life differently? How might you live differently?
Yeah, I've had all these experiences, so I know. That's why I say I've lived it, so I don't need to be told about it. My wife died 4 years ago. She's been communicating with me.
Wow.
And it doesn't mean necessarily her, but symbolically, through things like numbers, things. Well, 9 months after she was born in 99, 9 months after she died, my heartbeat became irregular, which to me was classical.
Mm-hmm.
It broke my heart. My wife died.
Yeah.
But when I went to the emergency room, I remember her birthday is 9-9, I just walked in the room and somebody yelled, put him in room 9.
Mm.
And then they said, we don't have a hospital room for you yet. Oh, we got it the next day, 819. My wristband, 8 is a new beginning, has 8996633. I mean, the nurses and doctors got annoyed with me because every time I'd have something with numbers, I'd say, look, yeah, we know. They all add up to 9.
Yeah.
But I knew my wife was watching over me.
Yeah.
And that's one part of it.
Yeah.
I had a near-death experience when I was 4 years old, choking on a toy. I mean, wow. I know we can leave our bodies.
Right.
And for most kids are angry when they don't die because it is fascinating to leave your body. And you're still seeing, thinking, you know, you don't have a body.
Yeah.
So when I didn't die, I always remember standing there yelling, "Who did that? I wanted to die." I felt bad my mother would find me, but that's when I learned my angel George said, "You're 4 years old, you're not supposed to die now." He did a Heimlich maneuver on me.
Oh,
and
my.
I didn't know what he had done until I became, you know, involved in medicine, because I thought I was watching the body have a convulsion and the pieces come out. But I realized later, no, George picked it up, squeezed, and out came all the things. But, oh, and I had a past life once when a woman over the phone said to me, "Why are you living this life?" Because I was so busy. I went into a trance, and my wife was a part of my past life. And no coincidences. I mean, I'm not going to get into all the details, but I killed people with a sword as an Irish knight, and I realized that's probably why you're a surgeon now, to help people with a knife.
Yes, you heal people with a knife.
Yeah, and one of our kids came home from school one day with this really big canvas, like 2 or 3 feet by 6 feet. All he did was write the word "words" on it over and over again. And if you write words, 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 you notice they become sword, 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 sword.
Ah, wow.
And I thought, where did that come from? And he said, "My teacher didn't know why I did this."
Huh.
Well, he didn't either, but I thought, he must have been something in my past, and he brought that home to teach me something.
Fascinating.
And it's part of what you're saying in your book. You can kill a cure with swords or words, you know?
Yes.
And, I mean, let me read you again the subtitle, because it says so much. A physician's revolutionary prescription for achieving absolute health and finding inner peace. One more story, and then I promise to hold my breath. A woman who had polio as a child said, "I didn't like my body because the muscles were weak and wasted, and I never looked normal. And then I get a neurological disease, and I'm looking even worse. But I don't want to die not liking my body and myself." So she said, "I laid down naked in front of a mirror and started loving from my toes up. Inch by inch, I gave love to my body." And she went into complete remission. And that's the part. You see, again, I hear these stories because I don't say to people, "That's crazy. You know, maybe you never had the disease or your treatment helped you." Or, but when you'd hear those things, I tell people, spend time loving your body.
Yes.
I love filling my heart with love and pumping it out.
Yeah, that is, that's such a powerful story. And yes, those of us in Western medicine are inclined to be skeptical because we're not taught that the body can work that way. Healing our emotions, that opening our hearts can change our physiology. But, you know, what's exciting to me now, Bernie, is that there is so much supportive science that suggests just that, that healing our emotions affects our physiology and instantaneously so. Even though we don't always, that science doesn't always trickle down to clinical practice, but there is good science out there that does say that can explain why that woman starting to love her body ended up healing her body.
Right. And more doctors now are writing books when they or their family members have something like that happen.
Yeah.
Because now they're not embarrassed to write about it and get it accepted, and coming from a doctor. Because it's you know, I have many copies of paintings, famous paintings with doctors in them. And the doctors are always sitting and thinking. They're never touching the patient. You know, they're dying patients, and they're sitting in a chair with their chin in their hand, while
it's
you know, others are paying attention to the patient, they're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get sick and the thinking stops and they wake up.
Well, I'm hopeful, I'm optimistic, although I think it's a long, slow time coming for there to be a huge sea change in medicine. To see these ideas trickle into education and to clinical practice. We're not there yet. We're definitely not there yet. We still send somebody for chemotherapy and then to a psychiatrist, you know, for their state of mind.
Keep pushing the drawings, because that brings out the, you know, the consciousness expresses itself that way, like in a dream.
I think that's wonderful.
I wrote to my medical school. They never answer me with things like this, but I said, next time you have future students come and fill out an application, tell them to draw a picture of themselves working as a doctor to send it with their application to medical school.
Mm-hmm.
Because it would be fascinating to see how many people don't put a patient in, you know, and want to be doctors.
Yeah.
Now, if you said, I want to be, you know, a scientist and work in a laboratory, fine. But if you want to practice medicine, I want to be a pediatrician, I want to be a family doctor. Where are the family?
Yeah.
Where are the people?
No, that would be a wonderful way to really, really seek out those people that are truly committed to the purpose and the passion of healing and partnering.
Yeah, because you learn so much about yourself by keeping journals, by drawing pictures. I mean, what I learned, why I was having trouble and what got me in, and I would presume got you into it. I call it our labor pains. I found it painful being a doctor because I cared about people and I couldn't save everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I buried all my pain.
Yeah.
Because, like, using that white crayon, what are you covering up?
Yeah.
That's when I began to realize I was hurting myself.
Mm-hmm.
By burying all this pain inside of me.
Yeah.
And as part of my uncovering, I shaved my head. I didn't know why, but I had to, and I did. And it just, many symbolic things opened me up. You know, it's not seeing myself as a surgeon in a cap, mask, and gown all covered up, but uncovering and becoming a person and starting support groups for cancer patients and helping them live. We'll be back in a couple of seconds to finish up with my wonderful guest, Dr. Patricia Musum.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every Thursday and Friday, 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom weaved through his delightful stories. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life. Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings in the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, daily messages of inspiration, hope, and love, and faith, hope, and healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
Are miracles real? Can you move from mayhem to miracles? 30 prominent authors say yes as they share their high fives and down lows of challenges, abuse, addiction, and love. Experience hope, the magic elixir of miracles, through the personal stories of New York Times bestselling authors James Redfield, Dr. Bernie Siegel, Sister Jenna, Reverend Temple Hayes, and many more. If you like bestsellers, chaos to clarity, and crappy to happy, you'll love crying and laughing through mayhem to miracles. Sacred Stories of Transformational Hope, available now on Amazon and in bookstores worldwide.
Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Folks, it's almost like saying that we're not just one person. So get to know your inner self. And I think that's, again, to quote one of the comments about Patricia's book, a must read for anyone looking to change the course of their life for the better. I think I mentioned that, you know, earlier. But that's what everybody's feeling and what Patricia, Dr. Patricia Muzam, has put into this. You know, this is a compliment, please. Don't think it's derogatory when I say she's not a normal doctor. She founded the Association of American Medical Colleges, and it's, you know, alternative complementary medicine, getting medical schools throughout the United States to begin to wake up to this. And I hope you can keep that up. I have to say, you know, it says that you're living in New York now. I grew up in New York, which I think was a good education also, with all the people, races, religions, everybody and everything. Everybody on our street was family. And I think that helped me become a doctor because I cared about people. So what have you learned from being in New York? But I have to say this. When I started, I got more trouble from New York, you know, because New Yorkers, they have a lot of things available for them. This is something I found. In Montana, you have a better success rate with certain cancers than you do with those cancers in New York City. Why? Because the people taking care of you are your friends. You know them. Wow. But in New York City, you don't know your doctor. You're seeing the specialist at Sloan Kettering or some other cancer center. They don't know you. But in upstate Maine, out in Montana, yeah, who's taking care of you? Your neighbor, your friend. So they have better survival statistics. So what do you think of all that, Patricia?
Yeah, wow. Well, I could go in so many directions again. New York is indeed a melting pot, and I love that for many people who aren't familiar with New York, who aren't native New Yorkers or originally from New York like you are, it is just a city. It's a melting pot where anything goes, and it's a city full of little neighborhoods. That are really like little families.
Right.
But that being said, I really agree with what you said about the power of healing partnerships and how it's more likely that you're going to have a fancy specialist at a specialty department at an academic medical center than your family doctor out in the Midwest. And that relationship with that family doctor or that person who's overseeing your care with someone is somebody you may know in a much more profound and intimate manner than with this fancy specialist in an academic center in New York. And that partnership is so powerful. A relationship with a practitioner can support our well-being or it can contribute to our worsening health. However we experience that relationship. I actually write about that in the book as well, The Power of Healing Partnerships.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, I grew up in a neighborhood like you're talking about, so our family doctor knew all of us, you know, and so did the neighbors, all religions, races. I mean, we were just a family. But once you went to a major medical center, it was not family anymore. It was disease, and we have to treat your disease. Yeah, my, I want to write a book about life. Call it Life, Mystery, and Miracles, because my mother had hyperthyroidism, was so sick, she was told not to become pregnant, could kill you. But she wanted to do her mother a favor and have a grandchild. And I'm not, I mean, I could take the whole hour just saying what she went through. but I learned an enormous amount when I learned about my early life. Because by the time they pulled me out of my mother, because she wasn't strong enough to deliver a child, she said they handed me a purple melon, not a child, from all kinds of hemorrhage and swelling.
Oh, my goodness.
And all the pictures in the family album are covered carriage, so I didn't know what I went through until many years later. But then it taught me more about mind-body. I had a grandmother who massaged me, my mother said, and pushed everything back where it belonged, 4 and 5 times a day. So then I realized I wasn't ignored. I was loved all day long.
Yes.
And let me tell you about body memories. 50 years later, for the first time, to make a long story short, a woman massaged me and my shaved head with oil and her hands, and I went back to being that infant again, my body memories.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And when I opened my eyes, the room was filled with people. I said, what are you all doing here? I'm getting a massage. We thought you had a heart attack or a stroke. We couldn't communicate with you. I said, yeah, I became an infant. But boy, that impressed me. And now, you know, when people get body transplanted organs, they have memories of the person whose organ is put into them. And that's why people need to realize your body is stored in you. All those memories, all those effects.
That's right.
And you need to
that's
heal
right.
them and work with them.
Yeah.
So what else do you want to tell us?
That's another interesting subject that you're sort of leaning into there, is the idea of memories and past memories and transplanted organs and consciousness not being limited to the body, and how healing those memories can heal us.
Yes.
The notion of healing from experiences we've had, like you had, from your birth, and the notion of healing if we existed before we were born, the notion of healing past incarnations.
Yeah.
I know there's been remarkable work by remarkable people exploring past lives, and somebody who's had a, quote, diagnosis that we physicians call, you know, incurable. You and I wouldn't call them incurable, but deemed by Western medicine to be incurable or chronic and debilitating, and healing somebody's past life memory completely transformed that illness from disease to wellness. So just the power of mind-body, the power of consciousness, this notion that we don't begin and end at birth and death, and that we can actually heal experiences that our essence, our consciousness has experienced through lifetimes can actually affect our physical health. These are certainly far out ideas that we're not taught in medical school, but we've seen healing happen when people have explored just that kind of practice.
Dr. Musum and I could go on talking for years because we agree with each other. And it's because our experience has taught us what people can do for themselves. And if you didn't grow up with therapeutic parents, then let the two of us become your chosen parents and change your life by listening to us, and let your heart make up your mind and use your troubles as redirections and find your way of helping people, and you'll give yourself a gift too.
Join us next time on Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel.
Until then, remember, be fully engaged in life, loving every moment as your unique self. In going deep within to discover ourselves, we can also discover self-love. Then, when we let our hearts make up our minds, we connect what our bodies do so well to the power of love. We can boost our ability to grow and heal along with our self-esteem. The sense of empowerment that results from this mind-body connection is one related to self-induced healing. When you add spirit to that connection, making a mind-body-spirit connection, you nourish your soul. For more insight, go to BernieSiegelMD.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.